Hey Dave, you want to chime in?
I'm sitting here trying to think of an example that adds to what people have already said. But I think the key point I would make is that in general, service businesses are probably even in even better position to benefit from this. Why do I say that? Because you are constantly interacting in a service business. You're constantly having interactions with your customers or failing to have the interactions that they would like to have. And if you have actually gone through the steps that Joe talked about, developing empathy for them, thinking like they think, understanding what they need, and then imagining the solutions that would work for them, and then you try them out and test them and make sure they work, and repeat the process. One of the key things about this approach is that it is iterative. It doesn't presume that you are going to get everything figured out all at once from the beginning and then just simply make a Gantt chart for how you're going to implement it all. It has to do with trying things in the real world and seeing how it works.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Dave. The fact that the iterative quality of this is that you try something and as quickly as you can, you get it out in front of people. In some cases, it's a prototype or just a test offering. In other cases, it could be the real service. And then you iterate as you learn more and more about it. I was going to go back to when you said law offices. The point I was going to make is I think for many people engaging a lawyer, it's one of the most stressful times in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's clearly an area where a lot of empathy could be applied. You know, what's it like to go through this legal process with us? What are the things that cause you undue stress? What could we do to remove that stress? And imagine if you built a legal practice along the lines of keeping your clients as calm and as stress-free as possible. But the only way you can do that is to understand it from their point of view.
Something. Another service business that's very stressful is financial services. Joe and Matt and I all have worked fairly extensively with financial services. And one of the core understandings, I think, that emerges when you work with financial services is that most customers are not looking for to increase their financial sophistication or this or that or the other thing, or all the things that financial service companies are always trying to do or force on them. You know, basically, essentially, they're looking for confidence. They're looking for confidence that they're making the right decisions, that they're going to do the right thing, that they're going to have a good outcome. They're not going to have regret, that they're, what behavioral economists call loss aversion. The fear that if I make the wrong decision, I'll regret it. So I don't do anything and I'm paralyzed. I fail to save, I fail to invest, I fail to do the right things. So when you're designing any aspect of a financial service, whether it's online or it's in office or over the phone, you've got to think, am I taking stress out of this relationship or am I adding stress to it? Am I doing things that are going to improve and enhance people's confidence, or am I doing things that are going to undercut it? I'll stop there. You guys can add stuff if you want.
Yeah, well, I think if you look at, to add to that, so if you look at Capital One right now, they have coffee shops. So they've converted a lot of their banks into coffee shops, right? And that's directly a result of a design thinking process that they went through with IDEO. So they interviewed customers, what don't you like about going to the bank? And most of them had never even been in one because they're younger. Like younger people don't go into a bank. They don't know why you do it, but they like coffee. They like comfortable places to hang out. So that's why Capital One has started to convert, the banks into coffee shops, the direct result of design thinking. And it's really helped their business.
And I'd say finally, to address one of the points you brought up, Alex, about service businesses and the fit there, is that the last couple steps are ideation and testing. And typically in service businesses, you don't have to go through a lengthy product development process like you would say in manufacturing. And therefore, the points that my colleagues bring up are especially germane in the service business because you can prototype things so quickly by simply changing behavior.
Yep. Actually, getting back to the Capital One example, I've been curious and watching that for a while. I don't know if anyone has direct experience with that, but I wonder if they have found that to be successful.
Yeah, I don't know if they have, and that's also a big part of design thinking too, is you have to keep improving. I think that's something businesses don't do, is they release a product and then they don't improve it. People love new product development or new service development. They incremental improvements are harder to make, but my guess is that they've had to make changes to it and in order to improve it. I went there once and then I started asking the bank person about the Capital One credit cards, and they didn't know anything about them. So they knew a lot about coffee.
I think that's a really, really important point, which is obviously design thinking is not all that's involved in having a successful product. And this, in fairness, this is part of the formal process, but you have to think about your go-to-market strategy, and you have to think about, you still have to have good operations. It's not enough just to have had a great concept. And I think that often happens, frankly. Someone will engage in a company, a business will engage in the design thinking process. They'll come up with a great idea. They'll maybe even implement it well, and then they'll fail to market it or fail to take the whole supply chain into account. Matt mentioned before Tim Brown at IDEO, who wrote the book Change by Design, which is sort of the seminal book for design thinking TM. And it's a great book, and it's full of great case studies. But one thing I thought was really interesting was the first two successful case studies that he writes about in this book, which came out 7 years ago, have both been taken off the market. And they both were very popular with the people who did buy them, but they didn't take in the marketplace. So I think that's a really instructive lesson, an important thing to remember. I'm going to stop there, but I could keep going.
That's such a great point, Dave. You know, to go back to your Capital One example, I don't know either how well it, succeeding. But what you would want to do if you'd fully embraced the design thinking process is you would have some design thinking people, that is people who have this kind of skills, go to the Capital One offices, banks, go to the Capital One and observe and see what's working and what isn't working, and be continuously looking for new opportunities to be innovative and to add new value, and do so, within your business process, business proposition.
Well, that brings to a nice transition of how would somebody go about introducing design thinking in their business if they're interested in this methodology? What would be the first step? How would you get started?
If you've never done it before, you're probably going to want to reach out and find some folks who have done it. And the people on this panel are all experts in the area. I'll just say, for example, if for whatever reason that's not an option for you, what I would suggest that you do is first start thinking about it, not from the market down, but from the customer up. What I mean by the market down is very often companies take an approach, which is, we have these different segments or different areas that we think we can address, and we'll plug products into those segments or areas. Instead, put a person behind every one of those segments and imagine, what it's like to be experiencing this from that point of view. And remember that there are going to be different kinds of people. Like with the Capital One example, there's going to be millennials, and there's going to be the retirees, and there's going to be everybody in between. And they're not all going to require this or want the same kind of services. And then walk in their shoes, either by interviewing them or by observing them.
Yeah, all you need to do is find a customer or a prospective customer and ask them, if you're a lawyer, just start off by asking them, tell me about the last time you had to go visit a lawyer. And listen to the story they tell. Why did they go? What was it like? How did they find the lawyer? How long did they have to wait? What was the communication like back and forth? So if you do that with a few customers, you're gonna discover a set of unmet needs that the current process isn't meeting.
Yeah, Joe just described is often called a journey map, and it's a great way to look at the whole chain of consumption and interaction. I'd also say, though, there are three ways you could bring it into the your company, Alex. The first is, as Matt said, you could seek out an expert and hire someone to train or consult, typically on a single project to get started. The second is to go to seminars, and there are many good intensive seminars where you can learn, and if you can't get someone to help you, that's second best. And the third way is there are a lot of written resources as well as sources on the web. So if you have to totally do it yourself, you can certainly do that. There's nothing intrinsically difficult about it. But there, in each one of the five steps or the 10 steps, however you frame it, there's a lot of intricacy in how you can do it right and do it well. And there's a big difference between answering a closed-ended question and an open-ended question. And so I think your outcome will be a lot better if you've done it with someone who's had that experience.